The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
A few more reflections on this image or analogy of being like a naturalist as we're practicing. Imagine the first human beings before there were books or a whole host of accumulated knowledge about nature, maybe about one area, the night sky. The night sky is pretty awesome, probably drew the attention of our ancestors with some perhaps inspiration and openness and curiosity. And, you know, if you look at the night sky for a few minutes one night, there's some things that you get. You may see, oh, there's that pattern of stars there, or there's this wash of fuzz, this wash of light that isn't specific points of light. And, you know, you'll see some small things, perhaps some certain things there. You'll see what seems to be clumps or clusters of stars. Maybe some awareness of certain objects in the sky that are brighter than others. The moon obviously is going to be kind of predominant. Maybe at a particular time of year, you might see other bright objects, like Venus is really bright sometimes. But if you just look once, then you're going to see one kind of presentation. And it takes a lot of looking, a lot of looking up and being curious to begin to see some of the patterns that are now quite apparent to us. I mean, we have the benefit of the years of accumulated knowledge to understand that at this time of year, you know, these are the pattern stars that arise in the sky. Orion is up at this time of year, and you know, the way the moon cycles through its phases, and how the planets move across what seems to be a relatively fixed background of stars. But we also see that, you know, the stars, they rise at different times each day. There's a whole host of patterns that only get revealed because of coming back and being curious. What's there now? What's there now? Those patterns begin to reveal themselves. Our minds seem to be designed to be curious about patterns. And so we don't actually have to work too hard to figure them out in a way. They begin to show up, they begin to reveal themselves. And similarly, as we observe our experience, sit with ourselves, sit with our bodies and minds and what's happening, we begin to see, oh, when these things happen, here's the results. Here's what this being has been conditioned with. So the patterns reveal themselves, but it can take time. And the pattern of bringing this kind of attention to experience, that too has effects on our hearts and minds. And we start to see those effects in our practice as well. We may see, for instance, the kind of delight or joy of being with something or a little bit of space around something that's challenging. And there's an understanding that this way of being helps the mind to both to learn, but also to kind of let go of tension or tightness around particular struggles that we might have. So it takes a lot of trust. It takes some trust that this learning will happen with this very simple form of practice. And there are times in this kind of being a naturalist that the attention may be drawn to particular areas of experience, particular things that are going on that seem to recur, that seem to be evolving at a particular time. At one point, a long time ago, before I started practicing, it was, you know, just ages ago, a friend and I took a walk probably about once a week. We went out into the hills nearby here in the Bay Area. And we basically took the same walk. We hiked to the same trail every week for a couple of months. It was about this time of year. So it was the springtime, early spring. And as we walked, we began recognizing there were all these buckeyes, these nuts. They're, you know, kind of about this size. They're pretty large, about the size of a baby's fist, maybe. Dark. And they really stood out in the green undergrowth. You know, the in California at this time of year, there's a lot of bright green plants that start growing in the undergrowth of a forest. This was a forest walk. And so these dark brown buckeyes stood out in that. And we started noticing, wow, they're everywhere. And a week later, we started noticing that they were cracking, you know, they seemed to be falling apart. And then a week later, we saw that in that crack, there was a little white shoot coming up. And then about a week later, we saw, you know, all of those buckeyes were kind of positioned in different ways, but the crack seemed to be in a particular place on the buckeye. And some of them, the crack was upright, and some of them it was off to the side, and some of it was kind of down, and that root was kind of shooting up, and some of these, you know, the root was kind of going up into the air. The next week we saw that root had curved down, seeking the ground. And the next week we saw some of those buckeyes kind of rotating, pulling, turning to orient themselves. All of this, We didn't intend to learn about buckeyes when we went out there. But there was a curiosity after the first couple times when we first saw those taproots, those white roots, we got interested and we began to look. You know, so that's partly how curiosity works too. It wasn't simply, oh, let's see, you know, it wasn't just what's here, there was an interest that had been created that oriented the mind to be curious about that particular thing. And so we kind of looked each week, what's happening? What's happening with the buckeyes today? And so that can happen too in our meditation. It may be that there's some aspect of experience that begins to arouse a curiosity and orients the mind to be curious. Oh, look at that. So that's a natural part of our system as well. We don't have to not look at something just because there's a kind of an orientation to look at it. In fact, sometimes that's a part of how learning happens. People looking at the stars, you know, it might be that they realized it was really useful to attend to, you know, as it first got dark, what's rising now? Where is something on the horizon? Because that kind of sets up a measure, something that you can rely on. And begin to see that at certain times of year, these things are like harbingers of seasons to come. So the kind of patterning that these things are connected. So the curiosity, the learning can also have at times a kind of directed quality. It might be that there's an interest in a particular aspect of experience and that we kind of look for it. I'm kind of curious about that. One aspect of experience that is useful to be curious about in terms of supporting our practice, and in daily life, especially in our kind of, as we go through the day, is to be curious about where we lose mindfulness. What are these places that our mind tends to get hooked by whatever, some activity or some state of mind or something? What is it? What is it that, where do we lose awareness? Some of you have already talked about noticing this in your descriptions, in the reports that you've made, and in the questions you've said, notice things. Wow, I noticed that I'm missing this, or I'm not seeing this. So when we notice what we're missing, or we're noticing that, wow, not aware in this time, and we might kind of take inventory. It's really a useful thing to kind of take inventory, not as a way of judging ourselves, but more as a way to kind of be curious, what happens there? You know, why does the mind lose mindfulness there? What goes on? What's happening? And not necessarily either to try to force the mind to stay present, but to just be curious about what is the hook? What is the thing that happens in the mind? So a couple of different ways we can lose mindfulness. You know, there could be a loss of mindfulness around particular activities, you know, certain things that we do, we may have a less habit of being aware, or just no practice at all with being aware. So, you know, turning on the computer, maybe that's a place where you lose awareness. Or picking up your cell phone, or maybe there's certain activities in your house, like when you start to prepare dinner. Or maybe sometimes preparing dinner is an easy thing to be mindful for, but when you've got not much time, when you're rushed and you have to do it quickly, that's when you lose awareness. So just kind of some curiosity about, sometimes activities can be a kind of an orientation. What activities? What are the activities that I lose awareness in? Might be connected with a thing that you're doing, or a place where you are in your house, or in your, maybe you lose awareness when you go into the grocery store, you know, wherever, you know, so things like that. You might just begin to be curious about that. We also can tend to lose awareness connected with particular moods or emotions or mind states that might come up. Maybe we start to see that we lose awareness when we get bored, or when we get angry or frustrated or impatient. So noticing where we lose awareness, that's information. It's kind of helping us to see the little pockets or rabbit holes that happen in our day. In this kind of exploration, I've gotten really curious about the losing awareness, not to try to rote force or by kind of pressure or just kind of active effort. So if you notice, okay, I lose mindfulness when I go into the kitchen, we could say, okay, I am going to be aware while I do this, kind of bringing in a kind of an active effort to just keep mindfulness going. That's not what I'm suggesting to do with this kind of information. I'm more suggesting that you be curious about how awareness gets lost. How does it get caught there? How does it get hooked there? As you begin to identify these aspects of experience where mindfulness gets lost. So for instance, you might getting familiar or recognizing that awareness gets lost when you go into the kitchen to prepare a meal. You might have a little bit of a moment of awareness at some point in the day. Oh yeah, gotta cook dinner tonight. Oh, what am I gonna have? And it might remind you, the thought of dinner might remind you, oh yeah, and I tend to lose awareness when I'm there. So, let's just be curious about what happens there. Maybe you begin to recognize that you kind of have a little bit of awareness. Oh yeah, I got to make dinner. Oh yeah, I lose awareness when I make dinner. Let's see what happens there. And the first day you do this, the first time you do this, you remember that, as you're like noticing it's the time you prepare dinner. It's like, oh, it's 5:30. It's time to make dinner. And oh, I forget while I'm preparing. So maybe I'll be, let's see what happens. And then by the time you get to the kitchen 3 minutes later, it's gone. You've forgotten. That's what happens the first time. Maybe you remember like halfway through the meal preparation, wow, I got caught and I didn't see what happened there. That's okay. At that moment, it's like, well, what's here now? Oh, the mind is really wrapped up in this and it's planning. And gee, I see it's kind of a habit of being caught when I'm planning. It's like the mind is really involved in that. Oh, maybe there can be some 50-50 mindfulness here. So maybe there's a way to learn to bring in the mindfulness as you notice where you're caught there. So, just some curiosity about where we get caught, where the attention, where the mindfulness goes away. This does take, it's kind of like the exploration with the naturalist. It's the pattern that hooks you may not be seen the first or second or third or even, 18th time that you do it. But what I see is with a continued curiosity, rather than giving up when you don't see what happens the first or second time, with a continued curiosity about a particular area of experience, it's like the mindfulness begins to attune to things that happen around that experience. It begins to attune to thoughts that might happen at other times during the day, or it begins to attune to states of mind that might happen when that experience happens. And so the mind begins to learn, not even consciously, as I said earlier, it doesn't have to be a conscious learning, but there's a kind of a way that the mindfulness begins to, with that curiosity, begins to orient around and curious around the things that happen in that field or in that area. So a very natural curiosity is born. And I'll give another example from my own practice. I think I talked earlier in the retreat about anger and looking at anger, and that was my very first meditation object. And it was a daily life practice. I wasn't interested in sitting meditation at that point, but I was interested in understanding my mind. I was interested in understanding how the anger affected me. And I read a book that said, be curious about the anger, notice when it happens. And so I kind of set the intention to be aware when I was angry. And the first time I noticed that, I was already in a rage, already kind of frozen in front of my computer, non-functional, just in wrapped into the rage. And awareness arose in that experience. And that kind of, I learned something about rage at that point. And the main thing I learned about it was, wow, that's really painful. Wow, the mind can't do anything but be in this rage right now. But the mindfulness arising in that moment, I was like, I had very little instruction about attending to emotion at that point. I'd read this book and I didn't understand three quarters of it. And I didn't have a teacher because I was in the Peace Corps. All I had was this book. So I just saw the anger. Wow, that hurts. I have no idea what to do with this. Well, I guess I go back to work. And I could go back to work. That was another thing I think I recognize in retrospect. I could go back to work. Before I had been frozen, I wasn't working. I wasn't even able to think about anything but the rage. So there was, that, wow, that hurts. I don't know what to do with this. I guess I go back to work. And I just let it, kind of let it go. And I could let it go. That was another kind of amazing thing that the mindfulness did for me in that moment. And what happened over the course of several weeks of being curious about anger, anger being that thing that caught me and kept me from being present, was that without my doing it, other than just being curious about the anger, the mindfulness began kind of waking up with the anger earlier and earlier in the process of anger happening. So there was that curiosity about looking at anger. I didn't have any choice in when mindfulness arose with it. It just happened when it happened. But over time, roughly, over time, in certain times, of course, it arose later and sometimes earlier, but over the course of a few weeks, that kind of being caught in the rage where I became completely non-functional, that stopped happening. It was much earlier in the process. It was more like a kind of a normal anger where I could know, yeah, wow, I'm really angry. There's a contraction. I feel bad. It hurts. And kind of like the mindfulness backed into the anger. And then at one point, probably a couple of months into this process of looking at the anger, at one point, the mind saw a thought about the person I was angry with before the anger arose. The mind saw the thought. So this, and this happened in a split second. This was just, and again, I didn't try to do this. This was just what happened. So the thought arose, the recognition that I wasn't angry, but also a feeling in that moment of really wanting to get angry at that person. The intention. It's like a freight train of like, oh yeah, I really want to get mad at that person. But having spent a couple of months really getting familiar with how painful it was to be angry, that learning had happened without my doing it. I didn't have to try to say, oh gee, anger is painful. I better learn that. The system learned that. And when the mind saw, and again, I didn't do this, the mind did it. When the mind saw the thought that there wasn't anger, but that it was like wanting to get angry, the mind said, wow, that's going to hurt. And it said, Yeah. Just don't go there. Don't do that. It let it go before the anger arose. That moment, I would say that moment is seared into my memory. It was one of the earliest deep insights that I had around the practice. And that's what hooked me into the practice. Because I didn't, I kind of stood there waiting to get angry because I hadn't had the thought of this person arise in my mind without anger arising in my mind. But I didn't get angry. And then what I was flooded with was awesome. This was awesome. This was amazing. And I was kind of flooded with appreciation for the practice and a sense of, I'm in this. I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. This will help me to transform. So that learning happened just through that simple curiosity of where does the mind get stuck? The mindfulness began to attune to that experience. It began to attune and it began to kind of wake up earlier and earlier in the process. I've since explored this with many things. Many kinds of experiences, different areas, places where the mind gets lost. And when that the mind kind of attunes to the curiosity about something like that, so noticing, for instance, taking inventory, where does the mind get lost? These days, I spent a couple of months looking at impatience. You know, that was a big field to explore. I spent some time on one retreat noticing, why does the mind get lost every time I go into the bathroom? You know, so just some kind of curiosity and just seeing that that curiosity allows the mindfulness to start to kind of have some the more we notice mindfulness in a particular area, the more the mindfulness happens in that area, I guess is what I would say, something like that. And this is very natural. This is kind of how it works with a naturalist.